Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios. It is 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. Last week we did it on a Thursday, but this is Tuesdays with Barry. Barry Trotz is here with us, presented by Poor Vu. Be ready when the puck drops in Smashville with your drink of choice in hand. Not only does Poor Vu have the best selection of wine, it's a one-of-a-kind selection you won't find anywhere else. Barry, thank you for stopping by. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So not a great start to the season. You know, you lose a game against Dallas, then you go on the road, and Cam Talbot locks it down with Detroit. Are you worried? Should you be worried? How many games until you should be worried? Or where do we sit?
Until we win a game, we feel like we're going to go 0-82. But I do know this. Once you get – it's just like I think with teams, it's like a baseball player getting their first hit. A hockey player scoring the first goal. You got to get that first win, and then you think you know everything's going to be all right. Been doing this a long time. We got a good group. They'll respond. And, you know, sometimes emergency is a good thing. I thought in the Dallas game, I liked our game, other than probably there's a 6-7 minute stretch in the second period where we needed a save. We didn't get it. In those games, you do need it. And then I thought we dominated the third. We hit 6 posts, I believe, or crossbars. So we were in the game, and obviously Stamkos ringing it off the bar with the
that play. Jason, that would have sent the place
crazy
nuts if he had scored with 10 seconds to go in the game.
And
I will give you that.
But I thought we played really well. Dallas is considered one of the top teams in the National Hockey League and one of the favorites for the Cup with teams like Edmonton and that. Detroit, I didn't care for our game a whole lot on the first half. I thought we gave up way too many odd man rushes, too loose with the puck. I thought Saros was really sharp. And then, their two goals were sort of funky plays. One was this sort of a half slapper from the point and sort of a high tip that was pretty close to being a no goal, but it was legal. And then, the second goal was really unfortunate. They sort of slapped past it, the backside, and it bounced around and found its way through Juice. But I thought he played well. But I thought we dominated the second half of the game. After you take away about the 6 minutes into the second period, I thought we dominated. And the one thing I'd like to see us is get a little more traffic. I thought we're trying to pass the puck into the net. And we're going to need some production. There's reasons we brought guys in. They're going to have to produce a little bit for us to give us good balance. I thought O'Reilly's line looks like they still got chemistry, and the other lines need to find their chemistry, and they haven't found it yet. So I'm not that worried, but I don't want to get dug in a hole here and then try to dig ourselves out. We did it last year, but we're not going to do it every year. So I'd like to get a win, especially at home. Home records for me is one area that we need to improve. Last year, it wasn't good enough. I know we're a good team on the road, so we got lots of pieces. So I'm not worried yet, but I always say the most important game after a loss is the next game.
I think every coach says that.
Yeah,
in every sport.
But I really believe in it because, we play every second day, and you lose one, you lose two, and then all of a sudden you lose 3-4.
Sure.
Now you're in one. So I just like to get our first one for our fans here tonight, and then I think we'll be fine.
What do we make? You brought up the lines kind of all getting together and gelling, and Cole Smith up there with Stamkos and Marchessault. What do we make of that? And kind of feels to me like you have 5 top 6 forwards, and you're trying to find the 6th. And how did we land on Cole Smith?
Well, I think one thing that Smitty does is he drives lines. He gets and hunts pucks. That's something that Bruno preaches. And I think with Stammer and Marchie, they're more finishers, playmaker type guys. So they really look for that one guy that maybe can do that. I did that for a number of years. You remember guys like Jarrett Smithson would be playing on the second line. He was there just to get pucks and get some pressure and let the more highly skilled guys do their thing with the when he retrieved the puck. So it's something that I think Bruno's looking to do. But Bruno's really will move people around. You saw it last game in Detroit. I mean, Marchessault and Stamkos had 4 different centermen. So he's still trying to figure it out. Last year, If you look at it, we did the same thing. A lot of times we were trying to figure it out. And then you start to find, I always say, pairs that really work together. You know, maybe at some point, maybe the Stamkos Marchessault doesn't work, and we go into, you know, like more of a four-line team. I don't have the answer, but I'm going to leave that up to Bruno to figure out. And he's a really sharp hockey guy, and we've got a good group, so they'll get it figured out.
What does that mean for Tommy Novak? Because, you know, I remember when the day that you signed Stamkos and Marchessault, and kind of the big question was, well, where are these guys going to play? And, you know, it's easy to say the first three, okay, we know, you know, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, they're going to.
Yep.
And we had Andrew on that day, and I asked him what he was going to do, and he said, you know, I think Tommy Novak's going to get the first crack at it.
Yep.
And in training camp, Tommy Novak got the first crack at it. And the other night, Tommy Novak, you know, on Thursday night, got the first crack at it. And then very quickly, Tommy Novak was off that line, and somebody else, Colton Sissons, was in. And the reason I bring that up and ask that is because, you know, Tommy Novak was a guy that was really starting to come along the last year, and then the playoffs hit, and it wasn't the same that he was in the regular season. And now we've already said, okay, let's try somebody else up there. So what does that mean for Tommy Novak?
Well, I don't think it means anything. I think what Bruno, if I was, I reading the tea leaves, trying to get in his head, we talk a little bit. But he's seeing if, you know.
A little bit?
Yeah, we talk a little bit. Okay. But, you know, the one thing that's undeniable that Tommy Novak and Luke Evangelista had a thing last year. They seem to have some, whatever that chemistry was, and I think Bruno wants to go there. He wants to see if maybe Stammer's the guy in the middle, and a guy like Cole Smith can do a lot of the driving. Stammer can make some of those plays with Marshy, and they can be a really good line, effective line. They just needed someone to really drive the line, because every line has a guy that sort of is the guy that's willing to dig the ditches, if you will, and you got a skill guy, and some guys are. It just meshes way better on those lines. You always hear about the great combinations. You know, I'm dating myself, but the French Connection. Everybody could tell you it was Gilbert Perreault and Rick Martin, and everybody would forget about Rene Robert. And he was a real key glue guy on that line. So all those lines in the history of the game, you know, Gretzky, Curry, who was their winger with them?
Sure. I mean, it's like Zach Hyman, right, with, you know,
yeah, exactly.
In Edmonton, who's going to be here Thursday night, scores 50 goals. Not because he's not a good player, but because he's playing with McDavid.
And, well, he complements McDavid so well. He does all the things that maybe a guy like McDavid, I'm not saying he's not willing to do, but he's just not as good at doing the stuff that Zach Hyman is doing. And Zach Hyman goes to the areas without the puck that are very difficult, which McDavid has the puck all the time. So it blends really well. So that's what Bruno's really looking. He's thinking long-term. He's trying to figure out the combinations and the best group of nine for us. And without, say, taking away the O'Reilly line right now, and then, you know, the getting Parson in on that fourth line to give us some weight to replace Smitty there. And Bruno's pretty good at moving people around. These are the lineups, the lineup that I think is going to start in warm-up and probably the first period. And then after that, we'll see where that goes.
Barry Trotz is on our program. You signed Scott Wedgwood immediately in free agency, the same time you signed Stamkos and Marchessault. And we know that Kevin Lankinen was looking for a starting job. You didn't have a starting job to give. And obviously that didn't materialize for him. But Scott Wedgwood, not great in the preseason, had a rough second period the other night. We know how important the backup goalie was for the team last year. Are you worried about your goaltender, your backup goaltender yet, or do you see signs of encouragement?
Well, I think, you know, last year with Lanks, at the end of the year, we offered him a deal, which would pay him a lot more than he's making right now. And he felt strongly that wanted to be a number one goalie, and he might be in Vancouver now with the injury to Demko. So, you know, good on him if that's the case. But at the same time, we had to protect ourselves. We knew that there might be something with the Askarov situation. Scott Wedgwood is a quality backup, quality person. And anytime you switch over teams, goaltending coaches, all that, it's different for him. You know, he's the first time probably in a few years that he's been on a two-year deal, not a one-year deal. There's a lot of stuff going on. And we haven't played great. I don't think he's had a great training camp for what we would expect and what he would expect. So, but I do know the quality of the person. I know the quality of the goaltender that he is. And I know the quality of the goaltending coaches that we have that I'm not too worried. But I think from the goaltending standpoint, the backup goalie, you got to get 10 wins a year at least from your backup goalie. That's something that I always believe that's the minimum that you, if you're going to be a playoff team, you got to get 10 wins from your backup goalie. So I'm very, I know Scott can do that for us, so I'm really not that worried. But it's he didn't have a great training camp for what I think he expects and I expect, but I know the person. He's going to be just fine.
Barry Trotz is with us in the program. Tomasino and Parson, two guys that last year started up with the big club, got sent down to Milwaukee. They're back up with the big club. It's kind of an odd man out situation, yep. You know, in, out, in, out. Do you view this as kind of the, I don't want to say last chance for these guys, but do you view this as like, the time to cook in the minors is over,
yeah.
And it's time now to prove that you belong in the NHL.
Yeah, for two reasons. One is where they are in their careers, and two, where they are in terms of their contracts. They're you know, next year they can be, you know, it's the last chance to really get a deal with them, and then they go into UFA and all that. So this to me is one of those contracts, a show me contract. Show me this year. And if you show me, I'll pay you. And that's what this business is. And sometimes the team and the player don't always come together at the same time. Sometimes a player needs that extra year. And so he doesn't maybe get it done in, say, this year, and next year he becomes a free agent. They don't get it done, so they don't get a deal. He goes to another team, and he finally gets some traction and gets it done. So we're sort of at that crossroad where we're going to have to commit down the road to these players, or we don't, and they're going to get an opportunity. As you see, I'm going very lean in terms of the number of players that we have, and they're going to get an opportunity because I don't think we'll be healthy all year like we were last year. If we are, great, knock on wood. But they're going to get opportunity, and I think, you know, I thought Tomer had a really good camp. And he played, you know, quite well through the preseason. Excuse me. And we got into the last couple games, and really his role, second power play, playing 5-on-5 minutes. I thought he's got some chances. Still got to clean up some details. On Parse's situation, came into the camp a little bit late, and I thought he had a probably a little bit below average for Parse at camp, but as a camp went deeper and deeper into the camp, and then we got into the preseason, he got better and better. So I'm expecting Parse to have a really good game tonight. And sometimes that urgency for those young players, it's really important for them to get over that next level. You know, are you going to be a really good player that we can rely on, or are you just going to be a player that fills the lineup?
Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of bouncing around and trying to, yeah. Barry Trotz is with us here on the program. So when it comes to kind of the money that you guys have. You know, again, I talk about this whole top six situation. We know who five of the six are. The question is finding the sixth guy. Obviously, the trade deadline is months and months away. Things will materialize. We've talked about the Johansson money and the fact that maybe he wins his grievance and that's $4 million you don't have. Maybe he loses his grievance and that's $4 million you do have. The truth usually probably lies somewhere in the middle, but something they end up having. But last year, we talked about cap space all the time, about the ability that you had to retain cap space for somebody else, facilitate a deal,
yep.
Add a pick. You're loaded with draft picks. Is there a thought in your head that this year you could maybe fill that sixth slot if you end up not liking exactly what you have here, but fill that sixth slot by maybe using that and somebody else's cap space?
Yes, absolutely. You know, one thing I found out last year, you know, and I made it public that I wanted to use our cap space. But at the same time, I think the cap space deals, what I'm finding is that you have to have a little bit of a relationship with the general managers and a trust that comes with, you know, being in the league a lot. I'm the new guy. So, you know, if they were going to one team or another, they were going to go to someone who they knew more than me.
Why?
I think it's just trust. It's like you have friends that you've had for 10 years,
sure.
and then there's a new guy that comes in and.
Well, I'm aware of the concept of trust.
Depending on your friends,
I guess
depending
I'm wondering,
on the types of friends you keep.
If I'm the general man, if I'm Don Sweeney, and I am trying to facilitate a deal, and you're like, hey, you give me a fifth, and I will, you know, take on whatever, are you going to think you're not going to fulfill your end of the deal?
No. I think there's just more comfort is probably the best way to say to pick up the phone, hey, I'd like to make this deal with a friend. Use some of your cap space. I'll give you something, and I think that works probably easier. It's easier picking up the phone to someone you know than someone you maybe don't know as well. That's just natural. So,
do you feel better about that this year, though, given your spot in the league? You know, and having been around now for a year.
I do. I think it takes some time. Just like anything, I have some relationships that there's general managers you talk to probably. Three times more than other general managers because don't have matches or there's not a lot of common ground on some things. But I feel comfortable every time, day that goes by, you feel more comfortable in the league. So hopefully we can use someone else's cap space. I would like to use some of our, say, prospects or duplicates in our system to make some of these deals versus just draft picks. I'd like to push some of our draft picks down the road if I can so that there's always a little bit of a pipeline of guys coming down in the future, because you get too many coming out at once, then you don't have room for them. So real important to spread them out correctly, and we're trying to do that on a daily basis.
How do you feel defensively? You know, we had talked when you guys signed Brady Shea about the potential for a shutdown pair of Yossi and Shea together. You guys kind of mixed it up a little bit. But defensively, how do you feel about the way they've been communicating and the way that they've been working together? You know, specifically that second period against Dallas, there were a couple miscommunications. But how do you feel defensively about where the team is?
Well, I think overall, I think in our own zone, we're pretty decent. And I mean in our own defensive zone, when the team has possession in our zone, in our defensive zone. I don't like some of our, we've given up a lot of odd man rushes in that Detroit game. We're getting caught in between a little bit in that what I call our recoveries, our track, and our protocols with our defense. Sometimes keeping pucks in, it is a split second decision if you're going to go and challenge that puck that may be coming out of the offensive zone for you, and if you're a second late, it ends up possibly being a two-on-one. We've had a situation where we went down the pinch. We did a really good job of shortening, but we let the guy go by us when he shortened, and it should have been a two-on-two situation. It ended up being a three-on-two situation because we didn't get any skin on our pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And so just little things like that sometimes when I'll just say if you're a fan and you don't know all the smaller details that go into some of these protocols within a system and some of the thought processes, it just looks like, oh, there's an odd man rush, how'd that happen? There's reasons for those things that happen. And we're, for the most part, Dallas, I mean, two periods, they had 11, 12 shots.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good team to keep the shot total down. We did the same thing at Detroit. I thought they were more dangerous, Detroit, just on the rushes. They had the odd man rushes that were failed chances, didn't get a shot, but they looked dangerous, and they become dangerous, and I that part I didn't like. But for the most part, our defensive game, especially when you come into the defensive zone, we've been pretty decent for this early in the year. Usually you get running around a little bit. So we'll see how we are tonight. Seattle's got a really good team. They're a deep team. They can skate. They can bring it from the back end. So they're a well-rounded team. Dangerous as all heck. So we'll have our hands full. This league is a bear sometimes, and every game's a challenge.
So I do want to ask you about Thursday night's game, just because I have you here now. Barry Trotz is with us. Edmonton comes in here.
Yeah.
McDavid, Draisaitl. I mean, what, two bounces away from winning the Cup last year?
Yeah.
You know, at the very, very end. Do you get excited? Like, when you would coach, Would you get excited when you go up against a great generational player, the caliber of McDavid, or is it daunting given how good this guy is, especially how good those guys are when they play here?
Well, I think, when they play here, I think we are.
I told you last year before the first game here, said off the air, I said, these guys just crush you every time. And you said, you know, everybody's been saying that. And I think, you know, this year we feel good. And you guys lost like 7-1 because guys are just unstoppable.
Yeah, it seems in this rink last year, they were unstoppable. We went to Edmonton and they were very stoppable. I think we won both games there. So go figure it out. I don't know. I would say when I was behind the bench and I saw McDavid, I was like, I'm watching this guy all game. I'm going to make sure that I got my best guys against him. And I respect them. And I, as a coach, you fear what they can do to your team. And so you try to prepare your guys as best. But at the end of the day, they're so gifted. There's such good players that you as even as a coach, you admire what they can do, even if they're doing it to you and your team. They're special. They're elite. They can do things that I couldn't even imagine doing, years ago.
How much fun is it when you get to coach one like you did with Ovechkin?
It's fun. It's fun. You always know that you've got the advantage. You've got that one piece that no one else has, and it's huge. It's huge for confidence, for a team. Yeah, if you have a game breaker like an Ovi or a Sid or McDavid, these guys they give your team so much confidence. They lead the way. They're not scared of, we're in a slump. We got to get out of it. Players like those guys, they go, don't worry, guys. You do your part. I'm gonna take the be the lead dog here, and you just follow my lead. And usually you do pretty well. It's the other players that don't want to take the lead is the ones that you never win with. So I always want those players that are up for those challenges.
Barry Trotz, presented by Port Vue on the program. Barry, good luck tonight. Good luck Thursday. And we will talk next week.
Thanks. We'll take any luck that we can get. stick with us. It's going to be a long season. We got 80 games to go, and we had great crowds.
I'm ready to give up now. 0-2, and I'm out.
Yeah, you're out. Tap
kidding.
Out. It's amazing. You look at some of the top teams, Colorado, Edmonton. I feel we're a good team. We're still trying to get on on first base.
Good luck tonight.
All right, thank you.
Barry Trotz, as always, presented by Port Vue on our program, Tuesdays, 5 o'clock. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 the game.
This is a defense. They get Kenny Moore back, so he's out there. But a defense that has given up big passing numbers to wide receivers outside the numbers this season.
Can Levis and company take advantage of some of that? Levis here, going to take his shot, throws into a crowd, and it is picked. Julian Blackman with a snatch for Indianapolis. Levis just throwing it up, and Blackman making the easy pick. Well, Levis, watch Levis at the top of his drop and how long he's staring right here. And then now he's looking here, but now look how long he pats it. He pats it and he pats it and he pats it. That's an eternity. So Blackman playing center field, he knows as soon as Levis looks that way, if he doesn't launch it and get rid of it, he gives Blackman too much time to get a head start and break on that pass. A critical, critical error trying to get the ball outside, but he gave him way too much.
That was the interception in the fourth quarter. Again, you knew it was coming at some point. And then Will Levis threw that ball, and I tweeted it out. I tweeted out two words, Ian, after he threw that interception.
Oh boy.
Right over the top. He lollipopped it like a can of corn up there, and Julian Blackman made a very, very nice catch. But again, it was an easy interception. And I tweeted out two words. You want to take a guess what they were?
I'm blanking.
I said he sucks.
Okay.
He sucks. And he does suck. Like, I think we can all agree that he sucks. Well, I did not notice this. I listened to the Levis press conference after the game. I listened to Callahan after the game. I listened to Callahan on Monday. I did not notice this until yesterday. Willie Donick You know, look, it doesn't take a whole lot for Derek to get all worked up, especially about Will Levis. I have yet to hear Adam. You know, Adam is doing a great job. You know, this is the lead of that show. You facilitate with the two other guys and then drop in a take. I have yet to hear Adam go off yet. It will come, I know, but I've yet to hear it. But every now and then you get Willie going off. Sometimes it's in response to something that I said. But again, when it comes to Willie, he was going off about this. And when I listened to him say it, I go, oh, my God, he's right.
He was mad.
He was furious, and he was right. And here's what it was. This was Will Levis after the game on Sunday. Again, that terrible lollipop interception because he's a terrible quarterback. This is Will Levis after the game talking about why he threw that interception.
That was one of the throws today where I kind of felt the lack of arm strength or whatever, where I feel like on a healthier day, I'm putting a better ball on it on more of a line. So it's frustrating. We were able to get the ball back and still make an opportunity after that where we didn't make it work. But, yes, that's a throw I'd like to have back for sure.
That's a throw I'd like to have back. Okay. But then he was, hey, this is a throw that honestly, this is the first time that shoulder, you know, the one I banged up against Miami, the one they gave me the little juicy juice shot, the blue tent, I came out, I had my helmet on, I was like, coach, I'm ready to go in. And coach was like, no, you stay out there because you suck. You know, that one, that, it was because I couldn't throw it. Excuses. And Willie's big point, and he was right, is he's throwing the coach under the bus when he says that. Because I don't care. If you're injured, go sit down. If you can't play, go sit down. Don't go into this game saying, hey, I can play. I can play, coach. I can play. And then go out there and say, oh, yeah, I screwed up because I'm hurt. This was Brian Callahan on Monday in response to Levis. You tell me if Brian Callahan was a little irked having to answer this question.
Everything leading up to the game and in practice and everything felt like he's good enough to make the throws that he needed to make to win the game. And I didn't have any reservations necessarily about that. I didn't think there was any real ill effect. I mean, I knew there was going to be some pain. That's just part of it. I appreciate him trying to manage that and fight through it for his teammates and for our team. I didn't see anything that would have made me feel like he wasn't able or willing to actually be able to play at the level he needed to play at. That throw at the interception, he had pressure kind of in his face, and he couldn't quite get everything into it anyway. I don't know that an arm strength or would have a healthy shoulder would have made much of a difference, truthfully. But, you know, he's whatever he had to say is how he felt. But I didn't feel anything going into the week that would lead me to believe that he wasn't ready to
whatever he throws. Whatever he had to say is what he felt, but I don't loser. And Willie's right. You know, Will Levis chucked his coach under the bus. Now, nobody cares because nobody bought it. You know, Will Levis has such little, like the fans and the media and everybody else, there's such little respect for his game right now that, again, he said, like, I listened to the press conference, and you guys know me. I listen to all this stuff, and I listen with these antennas, and I'm like, oh, did he just say that? Oh, my God, we got to bat. I listened to the press conference, and it was one ear out the other on Levis saying, yeah, you know, that was the one where I felt like my shoulder wasn't feeling good, but I still threw it anyways, and it got picked, and, you know, but I got to throw a better ball. And I didn't even think about it because I'm not sitting here saying, oh, well, he's hurt, and he's a bum, and I've said it, and so on. But then when Willie brought it up about just this, and Willie, you know, I mean, he put his foot down, and he said, you do not get up there and say, oh, well, I wasn't healthy enough to play. And it reminded me of a game last year Brian Callahan was a part of. Cincinnati came in here in week 4. If you remember, Joe Burrow was injured on the first day of training camp with a serious calf injury, and he had to be carried off the field and carted off, and it was, oh, no, Joe's out, torn ACL. Oh, no, they said, no, it's a calf injury. So, okay, calf injury, we can do it. Joe Burrow didn't practice all of training camp. Joe Burrow didn't even get up off the couch. But Joe Burrow's a gamer, so Joe Burrow let it go. And for the first month of the year, Joe Burrow was not right. And it was obvious that Joe Burrow was not right. I mean, he was not right. He was not good. He was bad. They came in here and got crushed by the Titans when the Titans were bad. Came in here and got crushed. And after the game, you didn't hear anything. You didn't hear anything coming out of Joe Burrow's mouth about, yeah, it was my calf. And that's the difference between winners and losers. Floyd used to always tell me, Bud Grant, it's funny because we've quoted Bud Grant a couple of times here. I think Floyd used to quote Bud Grant as much as I quote Floyd. And one time the Predators, this was when the Predators had made it to the Stanley Cup Final. We all watched Pittsburgh play Ottawa in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. And Pittsburgh ended up winning in overtime. And we were doing the show on a Friday. And unbeknownst to me at the time, I had strep throat. I would later go get looked at, find out that I had strep throat. But at this point, I just felt sick. And during the commercial breaks, I would put my head down on the desk and I would just look down in, and I'm like, oh, goodness gracious. But then every time that the segment would start, we'd get right back into it. And the old man said to me, he goes, Bud Grant used to say, great players play great when they're injured. Again, the Bud Grant sayings at least have kind of this stuff, with the connotation being that the guys who aren't so great, they're the ones that when they're hurt, they ain't worth it. Well, here's Will Levis telling us that when he's got a little ding in the shoulder, we can't expect him to make big boy throws or be treated like a big boy quarterback. And I said right here, I said on the show last week, I said, all right, let's make a deal. Let's forget about all the stuff that Will Levis has done, all the bad stuff, the miracle flip and the rolling the ball on the ground, and the let's forget about all the things Will Levis has done that's bad, but we got to treat him like a big boy quarterback now. So when he throws a stupid interception or he doesn't throw for 100 yards, we look at him and say, big boy quarterbacks throw for 100 yards. Big boy quarterbacks throw for 200 yards. He didn't even throw for 100 yards. So we're going to treat him like a big boy quarterback now. And here he is sitting there saying, oh, yeah, you know, my shoulder on that one, I couldn't throw. You know, it was a – oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is the stuff that led teams to say, yeah, I'm not going to pick him. I can't pick him in the draft. Teams like Tampa Bay that didn't have a quarterback at the time, Washington didn't have a quarterback at the time, these guys are sitting there saying, nah. And the more he plays, the more that's given to him. You know, if I were to sit down with Mike Vrabel and have an honest question about Will Levis and have an honest conversation, I'd say to him, I go, do you feel, talking about Vrabel, do you feel like when it comes to Will Levis that you guys really babied him last year? You know, you remember the video, I think it was TD put it out there after the Falcons game where Levis was getting ready to walk into the locker room and Vrabel was having a chat with Levis before Levis went inside. That's babying a young quarterback. But, again, one in one ear, out the other ear with me about Levis blaming his bum shoulder on his interception. And then when Willie says, hey, you can't do that. You cannot say, oh, yeah, my shoulder was hurt. Because now the coaches and the training staff and everybody else, they look stupid for playing you. And so, again, I think there's something to this about the fact that not only does Will Levis not have the ability to be a good quarterback from a talent standpoint, well, I think he might from a talent standpoint, he might just be too stupid. Like, he might just be too stupid. And that just might be the reality that, again, you know, oh, he's immature and irresponsible. No, those draft guys, they don't understand. Will Levis spends every second in the building. He was the first one there at training camp. He was the, yeah, he's doing the things that he thinks a starting quarterback should do. But the leadership that a real starting quarterback shows, yeah, Levis not interested in showing that. Because he doesn't know how to do it because he doesn't have it because that's not who he is. So, again, I'm not saying bench the guy simply because I don't have a desire to watch Mason Rudolph win six games this year, five games this year, four, however many. But, I mean, it's terrible. It is terrible. 615-737-1025. There is something I want to get to, something college football related. that we have got to get to here on the program. It's my favorite thing that happened on the Robbie and Rex Road program this morning. So yesterday, we told the story on air. It was relayed to me, Ian, I would say by somebody who would know, right?
I guess so.
Somebody who would know relayed to me that on Friday's show, I will admit, I was worried about the rat poison. You know, I had people that were tweeting me after the Kentucky game on Saturday night, and they were saying, what do you think of the rat poison now, Jared? Well, I think that Vanderbilt overcame it. I'm proud of them. I was worried about the rat poison. But I had somebody that would know relay to me that a coach on Vanderbilt staff told Diego Pavia that on Friday's show, I compared his media tour to that of the Hawk to a girl, which is about 45% true. I said, because Diego Pavia released a podcast on Friday, I said, you know, what are we doing with it? Everyone's got to have a podcast. You know, the Hawk Tua girl's got a podcast now. And kudos to Vandy, because Vanderbilt took that and they said, hey, Diego, because everybody's telling him how great he is. Hey, Diego, this guy's the mean guy on the radio. He compared you to the Hawk Tua girl. Supposedly, Pavia took his lunch, went in the corner and stewed about it away from the rest of the team. Reverse rat poison. If College game day comes here next week and we get a sit down with Coach Saban, I may have to tell Coach Saban about that. So on Robbie and Joe this morning, Joe was basically up on his soapbox saying there is no way that story is true. Play the cut.
Yesterday, driving back here from Bloomington, Indiana, I was like, all right, I got to hear some Stilly today. So I put my app in, listen to Stilly. And as soon as I play, he's talking about how, of course, he flipped out about all the interviews. Of course, and Pavia had a podcast. And then, I don't know, Stilly had some fake story about some coach said that, like, Pavia got mad because he called him the Hawk Tua. I don't even know.
No, I've seen the evidence on that one. It's legit.
It's legit that someone told Pavia that and he got mad?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, that's funny. But still.
My favorite thing is Joe thinks there's no way this story could be true. No way this story could be true. Robbie's like, ah, no, it's actually. As Robbie said, he's seen the evidence. Joe's like, it's true. Okay, well, that's actually pretty funny. Come on, Joe. Joe, you think I'm just making stuff up? That I would just make something like that up around here. Ian, I am appalled that they would think I would just make
something. Oh, appalled, yes.
Appalled. Wes is up next on the program. I'm Brian Callahan. Quickly, Wes, go ahead.
All right, Jared, I'll make this super quick, man. I have a theory, and I want your thoughts on it. I know that Callahan came out and said, yeah, the part of the reason why I took this job or a big reason why I took it is because Will Levis, and I believe in him. But I have a question. What do you think behind scenes about when Callahan took the job, do you not think that there was a possibility that he stood on the table and said, hey, look, I'll give it a shot. But if Will Levis doesn't work out, then I want to team up with Chad Brinker and Ren Carton, and the three of us go get my guy.
No.
Does that mean everybody's safe?
I mean, if that's what happened, sure. But, I mean, it sounds like Amy was all in on the quarterback when she sat down with Mike Keith and said, fans, we have a good young quarterback. And so I don't buy that. Predators game day's next. 102.5, 106.3 the game.
It's hockey night in Smashville.
Off over to Yossi. His one-timer is scored.
Bringing you the keys to victory and the latest storylines surrounding the Nashville Predators. This is Predators game day, now on Stillman & Company.
Predators game day presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, online at tjandersonhomes.com. Get your home seen, heard, and sold with TJ Anderson, my realtor. Again, that's TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Predators tonight taking on the Seattle Kraken right here, Bridgestone Arena, 7 o'clock on 102.5 and 106.3. The game, the Kraken are 1-2-0. They enter with 2 points. Predators need a win, because they're 0-2-0, and we go right to the coach's take. Here's Andrew Burnett.
I think we like where our game's at for the most part. I think we can tighten some things up. I think there's some summer hockey, you know, in there. And I wouldn't say desperation, but just like I just said about the goal, like once you get that goal, everything kind of breathes. So I think it's a good opportunity here tonight to play a really good game. I feel if we play the first two, we're going to give ourselves a really good chance, and hopefully we capitalize tonight.
Tonight is the first of three contests between the Predators and the Kraken. They'll meet again on November 20th at Climate Pledge Arena, and the regular season finale is set for March 6th at Bridgestone Arena. One thing of note, as far as the lines are concerned, Cole Smith has entered the top six. Ian, I never thought I'd say that in my life.
Top six forward, Cole Smith.
Top six forward, Cole Smith. So out is Tommy Novak. He drops down. He's going to play with Luke Evangelista. Meanwhile, it will be Cole Smith centered by Steven Stamkos, and Jonathan Marchessault will be on the other wing, and that'll be your second line as they try to find a sixth forward to go in the top six. So we'll be keeping our eyes on that. And then once again, the Predators need a win tonight. And that's our final thought presented by TJ Anderson Homes and Benchmark Realty, again online at tjandersonhomes.com. They need a win. You know, I mean, 0-2, who cares in an 82-game season? 0-3 with McDavid coming in on Thursday. That is concerning. Max has the pregame show. Pete Weber has the call. That's all coming up next. Stillman and Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow at 2.